Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
To the two-man power trip of wrestling. I am your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former TNA Impact World Tag Team Champion. He is known as Crazy Steve. Steve, welcome to two-man power trip. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
What is going on in your world? What are you up to?
It's the new year, and within a few short days, I will be in Las Vegas. That's the big stuff. That's the number one thing on the calendar thus far. Las Vegas, the rebirth, relaunch of TNA Wrestling, Hard to Kill, live on pay-per-view. Myself versus one Tommy Dreamer for the Digital Media Championship. No rules, no holding back, no excuses. This is it. That's the big thing. That's what I've been looking forward to since the end of 2023, and here we are now in 2024. So that's number one in my sights.
When you're with TNA, are you officially under contract with them for an extended period of time, or what's the deal with the new TNA, no longer Impact Wrestling, but back to TNA?
Well, I mean, my contract with them would have started when they were Impact Wrestling, so the rebranding has no change on that. And so I'm like, when I'm with them in the sense of like I'm still an independent professional wrestler, in which case I can take all of any bookings and such and so forth. But I put them, they're number one, they're first in line. They always get first crack at stuff. So, That's the contract essentially right there in those terms.
So what do you think about the name change, you know, going back to TNA as far as being Impact and then making yourself Total Nonstop Action again?
Let me ask, okay, what do you think of it first and then I'll answer?
Well, to be honest, when I first started watching, I really liked TNA. I love the X Division. I loved AJ Styles. I mean, we're going back 20 years. So I have nothing but fond memories of the Main Event Mafia when that was a gimmick, Sports Entertainment Extreme. I mean, I'm going back years. I'm kind of, you know, going through the years there. But I liked TNA. I don't know. Whenever they change it to Impact, I was kind of like, well, everyone knows it as TNA. You kind of can't change it. That'd be like WWF or WWE. You know, obviously they had to make the change legally. Mm-hmm. But if they changed it completely to something else, that would have been confused. I don't know. What do you think? I like it. I like TNA, the name. I always liked it.
I ask because I get the consensus that everyone has the same answer except for me. So I'm like, to me, I was in the locker room as they, if anybody who knows what's going on, and they posted a video at Bound for Glory of the reveal of it going back to TNA, and the locker room is exploding. Everyone's losing their minds and stuff like that. And that was a real moment. It was captured. No one knew what was going on. It was a real moment. And I remember standing there and I was just like, okay, like to me, it's nothing. Like, it's just all we're doing is changing the name. And I was not excited. I wasn't like down on it either by any stretch of the imagination, but I wasn't feeling what everyone else was feeling, including the fans. Like I said, the consensus seems to be everyone's pumped for it. So I was not disappointed in that. I was just kind of curious as to why that is. And so, like, reflecting upon that, I kind of realized that, like, I started with TNA, and the majority of our roster are comprised of Impact talent. So, they have never been able to claim the fact that they were TNA wrestlers, right? So, that kind of made me realize what was so exciting in their eyes. But to me, it's just nothing's changing besides maybe the branding and the name. Now, we will see where that goes. And they didn't just do this on a whim. I mean, there's a method to the madness. And so we'll see how that works out. I will say it's smart from a business standpoint because everybody knows TNA. It was called Impact forever, but people are like, what? And then you say TNA Wrestling, they used to be known as Oh, yeah, TNA Wrestling. Yeah, I used to watch that, yada, yada, yada. So the brand recognition has always been there. And I also feel like when they did change to Impact, I thought it was kind of a smart move because at the time, the words TNA had a stink to them. They reminded people of a bad time in wrestling as far as like the people who are running it. And we're talking the Hogan's, Bischoff's, you know, the Dixie Carter era. And like a lot of that stuff, it's no surprise or anything like that. It's not like I'm revealing anything, but to a lot of people, those were like, there were darker times in TNA wrestling. And then, so when you brought it up, it kind of had this smell to it. And I feel like that has gone away now to the point where when you bring it up, it's more nostalgic. Now it's exactly what you said. You go back with it for years. So now you're hearing this, it brings back a feeling of nostalgia, but we're also going to give you something brand new, stuff you haven't seen before. Like, I mean, we just announced Josh Alexander versus Alexander Hammerstone. Like, that's never been seen before. There's so much other stuff going on the pay-per-view. I could talk about it forever, but I'm saying it's smart in their sense, and if it develops into some sort of new TV deal with a bigger network or something like that, more power to them. It's a smart play. We'll just have to wait and see. So I guess, you know, short story long, I'm withholding my excitement till we kind of see where this all develops.
I just like it just because I used to really like the TNA product. I mean, going back, we're going back almost 20 years here, but I just always liked TNA. I don't know why. Maybe because it's so easy to say or chant. Mm-hmm. TNA. I mean, that sure. could be a part sure. of it too.
And that's, you're completely justified in that. That's all it takes. That's the beauty of pro wrestling. It doesn't matter what your opinion is. It's right. You know, like it's subjective to everybody. So if that's why you like it, then more power to you. Then you're excited. That's great. That's what they're trying to do, is get people excited. And if that is what is happening, and I'm the one staring at it from the outside in, that doesn't disappoint me. I'm just as happy. I am excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to see what kind of physical changes we make to the show from a visual standpoint and those sorts of things. So that part to me is exciting. But as far as like the bigger picture, we just have to wait and see.
Now, when you first got into TNA, how did that happen? Like, how did you get recruited in? Who brought you in? And when was that exactly?
I was first signed in 2014. And that was just through trial and trial and trial of like bugging them for years. I'm trained by Eric Young. So I broke in 2003. And then I'm trained by Eric Young. So that helps in that manner. Like, he's not going to make sure I get a job by any stretch of the imagination. But at the time, I was sending physical packages of DVDs and resumes and backstories. So those packages would go into his hands and he was able to put them into the right person's hands. And then whether they took a look at it or not, it's up in the air. They happened to be Bob Ryder, God rest his soul. And he was the one who called me and offered me a tryout. I came down to Orlando, Florida for 2 days. And I did my tryout. That's a whole nother story. It's a whole nother podcast. Did my 2 day tryout. And then they kind of said, okay, well, you'll hear from us if we think of anything. And I was very happy with my performance on both days. Everybody else was too. Like, the roster who had never met me before was like, dude, I don't know who you are, but you crushed it. That was awesome. Like, they've always been supportive from day one. And then I was just about to move to the United Kingdom. I was 2 days from moving to the United Kingdom when I got the call from Bob Ryder, who said that they were going to hire me. And I was like, well, what do I do now? I'm moving to the UK, which doesn't seem like a big deal to if you're kind of looking at it. But like, I mean, the way I was looking at it was I'm a Canadian independent wrestler with no buzz, really, because I'm moving to the UK. So if you want me for TV every 2 weeks, that's a plane ticket on you, which is coming from the UK to Florida. And so that's a pretty penny. It could sour them on the deal. And I was just nervous about that part of it. And he was like, Bob Ryder, God bless. And was like, no, don't worry. Go do your thing. And when we're ready, we'll use you and we'll figure something out. And we did. And the rest is kind of history from there.
It's amazing just like to think about like the tryouts and what you kind of have to used to do to get noticed as far as like DVDs and tapes and like, you know, you're sending in headshots and stuff like that. I mean, it is, I know that's not only 10 years ago, but it is way different now. It seems like the social media buzz and, you know, there's just so many easier ways for people to get your stuff now.
Yeah, absolutely. There was much easier ways for like for this generation to access, you know, the right eyes. And it's a blessing and a curse too. I mean, it goes both ways. But it's definitely easier than it was when I was doing it. So
yeah, they can find some stuff like, oh, he did this. You know, it could be something negative. It's like, uh-oh, he's immature or whatever.
That's the other thing, too. Like, that's what I mean. It's a double-edged sword. So it depends on how you use social media and whether or not you know how to use it as. I mean, if you're going to be a professional wrestler and that's your dream, well, the first part of that is professional. So you have to be professional in all walks of life, not just inside the ring, right?
Was your first big break, was that with the Menagerie, with the Mike Knox, a.k.a. Nux? Was that the first really, like, kind of breakthrough for yourself on TV?
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah, that's what I debuted with. Like, when I did my tryouts, I've always been Crazy Steve, from the face paint to straight jackets to loincloth to all sorts of different variations, but I've been doing that from day one. It's not something that I so much adopted, but it is me, right? So when I did my tryouts, I found out through the grapevine that like they never had the idea of like a crazy clown within this circus thing. The whole idea just started off with Rebel and Nux, and then it just kind of started adding on to that. And once they saw me perform the first day, I got an inclination that they were maybe looking at me as some sort of clown. So the very next day, if I was going to perform, I had it in my brain that I was going to change everything from like my face paint to how I walked the ring to all this stuff to be undeniable, in the sense of, if you're looking for a clown, then this is what you're going to get. And you're going to hire me because I'm that good. I can do it. It's, you just got to tell me what I'm doing. Give me direction, essentially. And so that's what I did, and it worked out that way. But that would crazy. Yeah, that would be my big break as far as like exposure is concerned. Up to that point, I'd just been wrestling on the independent scene throughout the United States and Canada for the past like 12 years. So if you didn't see me then yeah, right. Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, how do you explain or tell somebody, like, who is Crazy Steve? Like, that gimmick, when you really break it down, crazy psycho clown who's, like, unleashed, basically, out of the asylum. Like, how would you explain Crazy Steve?
So I would never put the clown aspect on it. People often do that because that's how they saw me when they broke into Impact or TNA. Which I'm not like that. That's I'm not opposed to it by any stretch, but I think they get lost in that aspect where, like, for the first 12 years of my career, I was never a clown. I would definitely say face paint was always a thing, but it was constantly changing from show to show, based on my moods and stuff like that. So it's kind of, I would say, like something similar to Gollum and the Joker had a kid. And then that kid was babysat by Beetlejuice, and then, you know, had off, you know, had some sort of family with the Manson family somewhere along the line. And then also grew up reading the Book of the Dead from Evil Dead. So it's an amalgamation of all those kind of things, in one.
And then a crazy thing to just throw on top of that, you know, about you and your personal life and what you know, what you truly are. I mean, you're legally blind too. So you almost throw like a little bit of Daredevil into there as well, right?
Yeah. I'm like a shitty version of Daredevil though. I don't have like the cool powers or anything like that. I'm just like the Walmart version. But then it's definitely true. It definitely plays into the story of it. And it was something like when I first started wrestling, I never wanted to be known as like the blind wrestler. So I didn't tell people for a very long time. I wanted to be known because I was smart enough to know like wrestling could take something like that and utilize it. Like Zach Gowen, for instance, he was thrown on to SmackDown having minimum matches underneath his belt. But because he had one leg, they threw him on TV and he did his part awesome. Don't get me wrong. It's not a knock against the guy, but that is how it happened. So I knew pro wrestling could do that, and I didn't want to be known for that. I want to be known for my wrestling, for my skill. And then if you happen to find out about that afterwards, then it just kind of adds to the story on top of that. So, but it is a thing. It's a real aspect of my life that I've had to overcome and deal with, you know, on a daily basis.
Just to stay there for one second, I just think it's amazing that you could do wrestling at a high level, you know, be on TV and everything else, but technically you're blind. You know what I mean? It just seems to me like, wow, that's a huge thing to overcome and to be successful. No, for a wrestler.
I mean, I get like, so yes, I've been told this many times that is the case, but I have nothing else to compare that to. This has just been my life. So to me, it's normal. This is normal. It might sound crazy to you, but that's my normal, right? Yep. So, yes, in the grand scheme of things, if you put it down on a piece of paper and you just write out the facts, it does seem special. It seems extra. And if that's the case, then awesome. That just comes from me being naive and obsessed and just wanting to you know, just not giving up and moving forward. To the best of my ability, mind you. I'm very lucky too. I'm very fortunate as well. I can definitely say that.
Now, I'm being dumb. I'm a fool, whatever. But is it almost like Daredevil? Like, as far as, you know, like, have you seen the show and the movie and stuff? Like, how he sees, is that almost like how you do it?
Well, how would you know? Because, like, I have nothing to compare it to. I've only seen it this, right? So, like, I've been asked the same question multiple times.
Yeah, I would imagine.
But that is the truth of it, right? So, the best way that I have kind of been able to come up with an answer for a question such as that, if you just take the idea of you're a fan of pro wrestling or not out of the window and just watch one of my matches, then. And preferably one, like a newer one, even like Decay stuff too. So for this reason alone, if I'm already blind, right? I can't see the ring ropes. I can't see the fans. My opponent, I can see my opponent, but like I'm not picking out details. I couldn't tell you the color of his eyes or if they have writing on their gear. I couldn't tell you what it says or anything like that. Then you watch an entrance like that. They black out the entire arena. They fill it filled with smoke, right? And then they shove me out of a curtain and I walk my way to a ring. Right. I'm blind, by the way. There's no reason for this. It's cool. It looks great on TV, but it is always a thing. It always makes me laugh. Or even like if you go back to the Menagerie days, it was the same thing. They would shoot me down a ramp on a tricycle, right? With all these colorful lights and smoke and stuff like that as well. Excuse me. But yeah, so like it definitely affects what I can and can't do in the ring from a physical standpoint, but then that's just up to me to work around that and be creative. And again, just don't let that get in your way. Okay, well, if like I don't throw a lot of punches, for instance, not for any other reason than I don't think they look super great, but also sometimes I'm either going to clip you or I'm going to completely miss, and that's an eyesight thing. I understand that. So if that's the case, then I'm just not going to throw punches. I'm going to do something that I'll figure out another way to strike you that looks just as good, and I can do it with full confidence. And that's just a small example of, you know, what kind of things I've had to come to terms with as far as, you know, pro wrestling from a physical standpoint. And I feel like we're on year 22 now, I'm doing okay for myself.
Yeah, to say the least, right? Yeah, definitely doing okay for yourself. Just to me, it's pretty... pretty amazing just to think about it. It's like, wow, like you didn't let anything stop you. You know, nothing could stop you from being a wrestler.
Right. And I say that with the idea that I pride myself on being a safe professional wrestler. And I mean that in the sense of like, when I hit you, I'm going to hit you. But I'm not somebody that you have to worry about getting your teeth knocked out or your nose broken or I'm not going to blacken your eyes or anything like that. Like it comes with the territory. Like wrestling hurts enough as it is. Like everything in that ring hurts. Any pro wrestler will tell you. And we have to do this night in and night out. If I hit you, I'm hitting you with the intent to hurt you, but I'm not hitting you with the intent to injure you because we have families to feed. We have bills to pay. We all have to get up and do this again the day after. And we have crowds that we're here to entertain. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what we're here to do. We do it at a very physical level, but, you know, God forbid, again, wrestling hurts enough. You don't need me to worry about, you know, smashing you as well. So having said all that and being able to do that with my poor vision enough as it is, I feel like that is a testament of and to itself, right? Like I'm Canadian, so I'm born on Bret Hart. It's put in your blood. And he was always somebody who appreciated the art of professional wrestling in the sense that he could kick you fully fledged in the face. And you could have a camera right up close. And we've all watched it as kids. And, you know, whoever it is can come back the next day and his face isn't swollen. He didn't get a concussion, anything like that, because Bret was so good at what he did. And I admire that, and that's what I strive to do. Now, I'm by no means am I a Bret Hart, but I'm at least that is like one of my goals as it pertains to being a professional in the world of professional wrestling.
Bret, one of the best, and like you said, never hurt anybody, but it looked like all his matches were very physical and snug and stiff and like all this other stuff, but not really. He's just so good, you just really couldn't tell. I mean, he's the best of the best.
He's a magician. Yes. And that's the, I feel again, like that's the art in professional wrestling.
When you are, if we go back to TNA here, we'll go back to Impact. When you are Menagerie, then it becomes a Decay. Do you feel like the Decay is more you? Cause I feel like that more fits Crazy Steve, the character. The Menagerie was almost more of like a circus kind of act.
The Menagerie was not like that. Was again, that was something that was given to me, like, hey, we have this thing already, would you like to be a part of it? Yes. Decay was my idea. Decay was something that I pitched.
Oh, it was. Okay.
To creative. It wasn't known as that, but like the seeds of the whole thing were planted from myself. Okay. So it would become Decay. Like I coming out of the menagerie, I was floating and not really like being utilized. And so I knew I had to switch things up. And so I always had, like, again, I didn't start out wrestling as like a clown in a circus. I've always been Crazy Steve, and I can, if you want me to be a clown, it's the same thing that I was doing on the Independence. It's just painted with different colors. But I always had something else in my back pocket, which would have been more like Decay, what I was doing. So having wanted to work with Abyss from day one and having pitched that to creative from years of even just trying to get into the company, I again pitched to work with Chris, Abyss, and they granted me that. And they also said, hey, we're going to put a female with you as well. And I've known Rosemary from the day that she's broken into wrestling. So we've been friends from day one. And at the time she was doing the Demon Assassin thing on the Independence. And I said, you need to look at this girl because she's really good. And I think she fits with what we're trying to do. And at this time, Billy Corgan is on board. He's into what we're doing. He was the one who came up with the name Decay. They liked what Rosemary had sent them. So then we were off to the races as far as like, hey, we're going to do this going into the new year. Like, this is happening. And then as far as like the look was concerned, I was painting all of our faces, our gear, all that stuff was mine. The music I had picked out, all this stuff. And it was like my baby. So, and I had Billy and I had the writers and everybody was happy with how everyone was performing because of course they were, because Abyss is awesome and Rosemary is fantastic. And so when you have all three of us, and like, I'm very close with Rosemary and I became very close with Abyss, and then you put all three of us together and it became magic, and it was awesome. One of my favorite times in professional wrestling for sure. So yes, to answer your question, yeah, it's very much more me as opposed to the menagerie. Not that I was upset with it. We could have done a lot of really cool stuff with that. But that just wasn't in the cards. So we had to pivot and roll with the punches, as you do in professional wrestling.
I always like those tag teams too, with like you and Abyss, like smaller guy, bigger guy. One guy's kind of like the heavy, one guy's kind of like the leader role. You know, I always like those teams. So you guys do win the tag titles. I mean, obviously, Beer Money, who's one of the greatest teams in TNA history. I mean, huge moment for you guys, right? I mean, that had to be a, you know, big time for your career.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely a chapter where like the things that we were doing were working. It was very validating in the sense, because like I said, like they trusted our input. And that's why I've always liked working with TNA or Impact, whatever you want to call them. Like they always want to hear from the talent. And if they think you have a good idea, they will run with it. And that's what was happening with Decay. Now, it also helps that we have someone like Abyss who has tenure with the company and who they trust. So if they're not going to, even though that I had been there for a few years and Rosemary's brand new, if they're not going to listen to the idea from us, they will listen to it from Abyss. But like, that was never the case. It wasn't like we had to go to him. Like everybody was so willing for cool ideas and interesting, you know, interesting things. And then we win the tag titles and it's working. And then from there it bleeds into us working with the Hardys. And the real justifying thing or validating thing in that whole feud was that it was put together like just naturally. It was never part of the plan. The Hardys were like very hot going in and we were right behind them. And so it just made sense to converge these two entities together. And it wasn't like one of us was pitching to work with the others. It just happened. And then it took off from there because of course Matt and Jeff were white hot and it was awesome. And then again, you add Billy and you add myself and Abyss and Rosemary and everyone's throwing in all these ideas and things just got so wacky and crazy. And like all of this stuff is happening before COVID, right? So I think about that now too. Like when COVID hit, there was a lot of the cinematic wrestling because there had to be. Yep. But then you, if you look at it, like if you like the beginning stages of that happened with TNA.
Absolutely. The Broken Universe and the Broken Hardys and the Deletion and the Great War and, you know, all the other stuff they had going on. That's got to be a lot of fun, though, because it's like, all right, let's just throw stuff out there, but throw stuff out there. And then everybody's like, man, this is awesome. How come we haven't seen this before? You know, like it's fun. It's fun when you actually have something. It's like, all right, it's wacky, but it's a great idea.
Yeah. And it's wacky, but the audience was in on the joke. We weren't insulting our audience.
Yep.
They didn't feel like they were being insulted because everybody was in on it and they embraced it. So once we develop that relationship, then we, again, you're off to the races. Then we can throw out all sorts of ideas. And yeah, there was many crazy ideas pitched and like many more things that could have happened if different things didn't happen in wrestling. It's super interesting. But yeah, it was like a really, really exciting time.
What do you think is like the craziest idea pitched as far as like the Broken Hardys and you guys and that stuff? Because obviously we saw some stuff with like the Total Deletion, Apocalypto. What's like some of the crazy stuff that was pitched that we didn't get to see?
The first thing that comes to my head was I think at Apocalypto, we filmed that in November and me and Jeff were supposed to revisit the pool scene. I will also say too, I feel like me and Jeff are the first people to fight underwater as we did in Delete versus Decay.
Yeah.
And we were going to revisit that scene, but it was November and the pool was so, so, so cold. Me and I was deathly sick that during that taping, I remember, but me and Jeff were still going to do it. Cause of course I'm going to do it. And I knew Jeff was going to do it. So I was not backing out either. So we were prepared to go and do it. We're at the pool warming up. And they shut it down right before we did, because like you guys are gonna get hypothermia. Like we're not, it's not gonna work. And like, it would probably be worse for the camera guy who had to be still underneath the water. That would probably suck for him. Whereas me and Jeff would be moving around at least.
Yep.
But that was pitched. This isn't necessarily an idea, but this is just kind of a story that happened. In Apocalypto, I was shot out of a volcano, if we remember, Tag Team Apocalypto, if we want to go back. I was blown out of a volcano. And so Jeff had built a volcano in his backyard, because of course he did. And the whole time that we're filming, this volcano has fire coming out of it. And it's we've been filming for several hours. And we're getting ready to shoot the scene where I'm taking Jeff's Twist of Fate into said volcano, into the hole, which is a big barrel. And like, we're literally coming up to like minutes away from shooting it, or at least, you know, 30 minutes away. And I had told them, like, you guys, we're going to have to put out this fire in this barrel. You realize I'm not like, it's red hot.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to take a bump into it. And everyone kind of clued, like, oh yeah, you're right. I guess we are. So we needed to have like, take time to cool this thing down. Cause I would have melted literally inside this, in this barrel. There's just so many crazy things. Like a drone shot fireworks at my face. I fought Matt and Jeff Hardy in fire, and like it's all at night. I can't, and I'm blind. keep that in mind.
Remember
like,
that
fireworks are being shot at my face. I'm fighting Matt and Jeff Hardy in their backyard in fire. Like you can't breathe. It's just all this black smoke. It was the whole thing was was really interesting. I'm being, it's 5:30 in the morning. The sun's just coming up. I'm being driven to my hotel by Billy Corgan. And I'm like, I'm just thinking about like the whole scenario, what just happened in the last past few hours. And it completely still to this day blows my mind. Even if you didn't have a camera filming it, I would have done it all because I'll never have that experience ever again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's something crazy, and I don't think I've ever told anybody this story, but I used to be, well, people probably know about the King Kong Bundy part, but I used to be his manager kind of behind the scenes for a brief period of time before he passed. We were kind of buddies too, so I would help him. Matt Hardy contacted him, and I don't know if you were a part of this or not, but it was for one of these deletions. He said he wanted him to come out of either the pool or whatever it's called. He said he wanted him to come out and be the surprise guy because you haven't seen King Kong Bundy in forever. And didn't have great health and he had some other, you know, things going on, but he was turning Matt down, but I was like, oh my God, you should do it. That's so funny. But I don't know if you've ever heard that or part of the planning, or if Matt is just doing that on his own going, what legend can I get that we could have randomly appear and people would be shocked?
Oh, well, that was essentially it. Like, what legend could we have? And then the names would just be fired out. So,
yeah.
The fact that King Kong got an invite doesn't shock or surprise me, because there's a lot of names that were supposed to be part of these deletions. Yeah.
I just thought, like, to him, I was like, man, Chris or Bundy, I was like, man, that's just so random. He wants you to be part of this match, but it kind of fits in a weird way. Yeah.
Oh, 1,000%. Anything, that was the beauty of it. There were, like, the doors were open for creativity in those types of scenarios that Matt was putting together. So, like, anybody could have been a part of it if they were open to it, you know. At one point, I think we reached out to Bret Hart, I think, at one point. To see if he would be a part of it. So like I said, like, all sorts of names were pitched for any scenario. It's hard to remember which ones were which, because there were just so many random things that we could have and tried to do, and for various reasons it just didn't come together. But like, we always had something else in the back pocket. So yeah, we were never short of ideas when filming those things.
I always feel like there's some good stuff after that was cinematic that was done, but I don't know if anything kind of matches up to what you guys were doing at that point, because that was so entertaining and so good. It almost comes off like some of the other stuff was trying to copy you guys a bit.
In what regard? What other stuff that we did?
No, like other companies tried to do after that.
That's professional wrestling. That's par for the course. Something gets over and then somebody will take that thing and then put their spin on it. And it's not just happen. It doesn't just happen with cinematic matches. It can be characters. It can be, it's just part of pro wrestling. You mean nothing. It's very, very, very difficult to find something original. But you know, it's just how people put their spin on it, but it doesn't shock or surprise me. It's always been that way.
Hey, pretty original.
But it does speak to, it speaks to the reach that Delete or Decay and Tag Team Apocalypto had at the time. If other companies are trying to jack your stuff, then that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
Right?
No.
All press is good press in a way, right? So, So, I mean, if anything, it's a testament to to how successful it is that what we were doing.
You put the crazy minds of Crazy Steve and Crazy Matt Hardy together. You get some good stuff out of there.
That's right. That's right.
So when you decide to kind of move on from TNA, you do try out for WWE, right? I mean, you did get a tryout down at the Performance Center at one point.
I did, yes.
So what happened? What was that all about? And like, how do you get the tryout? Like, who contacts you?
It comes down to not who you know in pro wrestling, but who's willing to say they know you. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I know a lot of people in professional wrestling, but if I'm a dick or I'm an asshole, then those people aren't going to put their neck out for me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I knew the tryouts were happening, and then it just became an option. My contract was coming up at the time anyway, and so it became, well, this could potentially be an option for you if you'd like to try out. And I had a bunch of friends who had worked there at the time, in Bobby Roode, Eric Young, Sean Spears. All these guys are working for NXT. So, you know, I'm getting kind of an idea of, like, just through random conversation of, like, hey, what's it like there? Are you happy? You know, this, that, or the other. So it just became more and more of a reality and more of an option. And then at the time, on that side, but then on the Impact side, we were going through a change in management. Jeff, I think, was looking to take back over at the time. And then it came time for my contract to come up. And then they offered me something that I didn't necessarily agree with. And then I made my choice. So I just chose to go this other route and kind of see how that worked out. And I think, looking back on it, like, if I didn't make that choice, I would regret it. I thoroughly enjoyed my my tryout with WWE. They were awesome. Everybody was super professional, and it was a positive experience all around. And it gave me a sense of confidence coming out of there that I don't know I would have had I not tried out for them. And that was that. And then after that, like, it's kind of an example of like betting on yourself, but like it doesn't come up like how you want it to. So I had to pivot again. I had to roll with the punches. I'm like, okay. So like that didn't work out how I wanted it to. I'd come to find out that no one in our tryout, we had 50 people, and no one got signed, and that was really strange. And then I come to find, or at least I was told, and I couldn't tell you the source or how justified they were either, but it was like they were on a hiring freeze at the time of the tryout. And I was like, okay, well, that begs the question then, like, why are we having tryouts if you guys are having a hiring freeze, right? But
right,
also
makes
knowing
sense. Yep.
Also knowing professional wrestling and how ridiculous and crazy it is, regardless of the company, it didn't shock or surprise me either.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, that actually makes sense too. Yep, because I've heard crazier stories, to be honest with you. So if that was the case, then okay, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter anyway. It doesn't change anything, regardless of what the reason is. It doesn't change anything. I still have to move on. So that's what I did.
The wacky world of professional wrestling makes no sense, but then it makes perfect sense. It's such a weird
In the same time, yes, absolutely.
So obviously, you know, there's OVW, some NWA stuff. I mean, you're all around, you're doing stuff, but you end up back in Impact. Is that something with you have a great relationship with Scott D'Amore? Or, you know, is that something, maybe comfortability or something where it's like they want you back because they know like what you're capable of and they have a role for you there?
No, not any of like, I have a history with Scott, like, but it comes back. Like, I mean, the reason why I was able to float around as much as I did in between that is just because, again, it comes back to professionalism and having a good rapport with the people that I've worked for. So I was able to do that. But then when it comes to Impact, it happened to be timing and place, right? I was local. They can trust me. I was suited for the role that they needed me in, which was just like it was a surprise in a six-man tag with Rhino and, ironically enough, Tommy Dreamer. And I was close, and so they needed me, and Tommy was the one who called me and asked me, hey, do you want to come in and do this? Sure. And we looked at it as like I wasn't trying to get a job, and they weren't calling me for a job, but at the same time they're like, hey, come out for these TVs and we'll see what happens. I was like, okay. So I treated it like a two-day just in job interview. Went out there and I did my job, and then my segment aired, the TV segment I did aired, and then as soon as that aired I got a call from D'Lo and he was like, hey, we want to offer you a contract. I said, okay, there's a pandemic going on right now, yeah, let's go, let's play. And so that's how that worked out. And so, and good on them, right? You know what I mean? Like, where other companies are firing their talent, Impact Wrestling is offering me a job on TV with no audience. Sure. Let's go.
What was that like? Is that's got to be surreal. You know, you're used to an audience, used to hearing some sort of audience, you know, whether it's a positive or negative, but it's one of those things where it's unprecedented, which you heard a million times. This is unprecedented. It's unprecedented. Well, what did you think? I mean, it was literally insane for a few years.
Right. And like, if you look at that big picture, God forbid we ever have to go through that type of a scenario again. But I'm saying, like, in the history of professional wrestling, this never happened. And I am a part of a generation that not only lived through it, but performed through it. In the big picture, that's pretty amazing, I think. It's not my favorite time, let's put it that way. It sucked to perform in front of nobody. It hurts so much more. It sucks. It hurts so much more.
No adrenaline, right?
No, you try wrestling Moose for like 20 minutes in a main event with no one there. It hurts so bad. He's a large human being.
Yep.
But yeah, like it's not there. It's like I think anybody listening who is a professional wrestling fan has likely dabbled in backyard wrestling. I compared it to backyard wrestling when I was a kid, only I'm trained and I have all of the best toys to play with. Right? Nice. Like I have a good, yes. I have an awesome entranceway with smoke and there's actual cameras there, but there's no audience. It's the same thing I was doing in backyard wrestling. I was performing in front of nobody or pine trees or whatever. Right.
Yep.
But also you looked at it as a challenge too. It wasn't, I didn't take it lightly. You hear of like during that time, people were stopping the cameras to like water breaks or whatever. I'm not interested in that. I made it a mission to anytime I was in the ring, you were getting it in one take. We're not stopping the cameras. We're going all the way through this. I'm only doing it once. I'm not interested in doing it multiple yeah. times in front of nobody. So, and the reality is I always looked at it like this isn't going to be forever. There's no way I'm going to start relying on something like we can stop the cameras because there will be people back in these arenas and you can't stop the cameras then. So I'm interested in even playing with that idea.
I didn't realize that they were hiring people during the pandemic either. I didn't realize that. I mean, that's great on them because, like you said, there was a lot of cuts during the pandemic, which adds to the extra scariness of like, okay, I don't have a job and we mm-hmm. don't know what the hell's going on in the world. We can't go out of the house. I mean, pretty crazy that they did it, but awesome on them. Very good on them.
Absolutely. Again, and like, yeah, regardless if I work for them or not, I've always had a good thing to say about that company because they've always treated me very well. So that's just another example of it.
When Decay comes back around, obviously you and Rosemary, is that your idea, their idea, or maybe a collaboration to bring you guys back?
That's their idea. I couldn't tell you why, but that was just their idea. If it was up to myself and Rosemary, we would have drawn it out a lot more and had probably a different take on things. But it was like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're also adding Black Taurus. I was like, ooh, okay, all right. And then we're off and running. I was like, okay. So then, again, you're just rolling with the punches. It was very different than the first go around because I didn't have nearly the control that I had last time. Not even control, but input, because there's a whole different writing team that that wasn't familiar with me and that I wasn't familiar with them too. So, and I didn't have like a Billy Corgan there. It was, again, this is somebody else's idea. So the second go around was far stranger for me because I felt so much more like a part of it. Not a part of it. Like I was almost looking at it from the outside in. But then we did some really cool stuff in that run as well. But it was definitely more so their idea than mine and Rosemary's at that time.
Black Taurus, very good Lucha Libre star, if you will. Very good luchador. Why did they put him just in their mind? They were just trying to get him over? Like, what was the explanation of putting him with you guys?
Couldn't tell you. I was just told he was put with me. And then I saw him, and I was like, oh, cool. He looks awesome. And then I get to know this human being, and I'm like, oh, he is awesome. And it worked out perfect. So whether they knew that already or they just thought, let's see how this works out, then I couldn't tell you what their thought process was besides the visual representation of that person and yep. what he brings and how that would fit in with us. And it worked. It was awesome. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about him.
Man, he's very good in the ring. If anybody hasn't seen him, he's excellent. Against luchadors or not luchadors, like it's, you know, guys like you as well.
He's a great professional wrestler.
Yes, yes.
He's fantastic at pro wrestling. That's the best. Yes. Yeah, regardless of the situation you put him in, he is tremendous when it comes to professional wrestling.
So obviously, feuding with him or teaming with him, he's great. That's the bottom line.
I'd much rather team with him. He hits hard. He hits so hard. When I was feuding with him, it was 3 years of like, oh, this is what that feels like. For 3 years, I've been just seeing this from, man, I really liked it better when you were on my side.
Right, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, as you're, you know, coming back through, did you notice like a big time change besides the creative team from back when you were there the first time to the basically the return?
No, not necessarily. Like, It seemed, everything seemed familiar, but it all had its little changes at the same time too. Regardless of what incarnation you want to look at, the roster's always been the same, and as it pertains to a bunch of hungry men and women who want to put on the best match that they possibly can, but also want their coworkers to put on the best match that they possibly can. Right? It's always been that way, regardless of roster. The writing team can switch in and out. The owners, you know, switch in and out, but that part has always been the same. So it, again, it was a mixture of like stuff that seems familiar with little changes here and there.
And it seems like, not that critics can be, I don't know, sometimes they can be a little harsh on some of the wrestling shows, but it felt like Impact, for, and even still to this day, for a very long time, they were getting mostly positive reviews, which was kind of strange for wrestling critics. But it did seem like whatever you guys had been doing for the last few years was like really resonating with a lot of the even the critics, obviously fans too, but a lot of the critics were loving you guys, what you were doing creatively.
And I think that goes back to what I was saying before when we first started the conversation of like, TNA for a long time had this stink to it. And that's what a lot of those people will remember. And then it hasn't been that way for a very long time. We have a very good professional wrestling television show. We just need more eyes on it. And it's been that way for a long time. I know this because I'm at the shows. I've seen all of the matches. So and granted, I'm biased. Don't get me wrong. But I think regardless of your flavor of pro wrestling, we will give you a variety of everything if you watch our show. We just have to be seen by more eyes.
For sure, that's definite. When you look at it too, it's like, man, what a roster! Like, just on paper, whatever you want to say, that you guys do have a great roster. More people need to see all these great guys on this roster.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Josh Alexander, Speedball, Mike Bailey. I mean, there's guys, obviously Shelley and Sabin, which everybody should know, you know, from years ago from TNA. But there's so many good guys on the roster right now.
Oh, 1,000%. Our roster, yeah. Again, we have a bunch of hardworking men and women who want to put on the best match, but also want their coworkers to put on the best match. It's always been that way. Like, there's no egos in the locker room. It's definitely, and it sounds so cliche to say it, but it's definitely a family atmosphere. But I also think, like, if you look at the past few years and you look at the talent that has come through our locker room, from the Briscoes to Matt Cardona to W. Morrissey, like, all these guys will say the same thing, that they all enjoyed their time in Impact. And again, it comes back to the roster, comes back to the guys and girls who have been there, like myself, day in, day out, you know, bleeding, sweating, grinding away to put on the best television show that we possibly can.
As we hit the wind down here, we'll head towards the finish. Who are some guys you want to work with that you haven't? And who are some guys that maybe you want to work with again?
Guys that I want to work with who I haven't. Rich Swann is at the top of that list. I'd like to get in the ring again with Chris Bay. I'd like to do... Anytime I get in the ring with Eric Young, I mean, I know it sounds cliche because he's the guy who trained me, but I also think there is definitely something to what I'm doing and something to this whole world-class maniac motif that he likes to sport when he comes to the ring too. There's a lot of guys that I could do some really fun things with. Steve Macklin would be another one. Bully Ray. I would love to do something with Bully Ray. Like, the list goes on and on. I'm more interested in the story than the actual like physical of the matchup. If you can give me an interesting story, we can put all the moving pieces together, no problem. And I'm my strength in professional wrestling comes in storytelling. The athletics of a Mike Bailey or a Trey Miguel, those guys are on a whole nother level, and I'm not trying to even compete. Because I'm one of them blind, and two, like, they're so much younger than me, and they have that, like, that's their strength. But my strength lies in storytelling and character work. So give me characters, give me a story, and then that's when I can really sink my teeth into it, and that's when I feel like I'm at my best.
Now, what's next for Crazy Steve? What's coming up?
What's next for me is my goal in capturing that digital media championship from Tommy Dreamer. I've said it for ages now. I literally just put, I don't know when this is going to air, but on the time that we're recording this, like an hour ago, I just posted a video on my Instagram, TNA_crazy_Steve. You can go look it up. I have claimed that I am Tommy's angel of death. I am here to end his final title reign in TNA wrestling. And I am going to do that on January 13th. Then that digital media championship will be mine. And that the lineage of that title is fresh. It's fresh blood. So I find the challenge of carving not only my legacy, but a legacy within a title, you know, making a stain or a scar within the history books of pro wrestling. That's the challenge for 2024 for me as it pertains to that digital media championship. Again, its lineage is new, so I have a hand in writing the chapters that go into that story, and that's pretty exciting.
I like the way you put that, too. You're going to be his angel of death. I like that. Nice.
Well, I have to prove it on January 13th. That's the thing. So, those are strong words, granted, but that's what's next for me, is proving those words. And you know, again, and I'm not selling him on fear. I'm selling him on the truth. Truth is, that is what is going to happen. Now I have to back that up January 13th.
Kind of fearful for Tommy Dreamer right now, to be honest. Something bad might happen.
God willing.
Yeah. Goals outside of the digital media championship. Are you looking, you know, once you have it, are you looking beyond? Do you want to be the world champ? Like, what are the big time goals for Crazy Steve?
I'm taking it one day at a time. There's no big time goals. It's again, I roll with the punches, and I'll make the best out of any situation that I'm put in. So that's the long short of it.
You mentioned your Instagram, but social media-wise, where can everybody follow you and hopefully watch some more of your great content that you're putting out there?
Absolutely, yeah. So if you're not watching TNA Wrestling, you should be. And you can find that on the internet, if you have the internet. if you're looking, I'm as far as social media is concerned, on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, I'm at Steve of Crazy. Crazy is always spelled with two Z's. And my Instagram, which I'm far more active on, is, again, TNA_crazy_Steve. And, of course, I'm available for independent bookings as well, signings, seminars, all of that stuff. And that is at bookcrazysteve@gmail.com.
And I love this Angel of Death gimmick. I want to see more of that. I like the darker side of Crazy Steve.
Well, then you tune in January 13th. Hard to kill.
Yes. Hey, don't forget Access TV, too. If people have access, you can watch Impact. Well, a lot of people are saying one of the best wrestling shows weekly, episodically, that they watch. So that's
absolutely
pretty high praise.
Here's the other thing, too. If you don't have Access TV, it's the year 2024. That's not an excuse. You have the internet. You will find the show somewhere on the internet. Watch it. It's awesome. I promise you.
Hey, the YouTube channel is pretty popular too. So definitely check out the YouTube channel.
It's 2024. If you can't find us on cable TV, TNA Wrestling is somewhere on social media. You will be able to find us. I promise you.
Stream the damn thing. Yeah, I agree. Totally true. Yes. But Crazy Steve, thank you so much for all the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you as well. I appreciate it. Hopefully your listeners enjoyed it as well.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at prowrestlingtees.com. two-man power trip where the power lies, brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between two and five players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.